I'm Athol Duncan, one of the executive directors of ICAST. This is one of our career mentoring podcasts. The aim is to enable CAs to learn from other CAs who've walked in their path before them. One of the biggest segments of ICAST members is finance directors. CAs are FDs or CFOs of many of the UK's and the world's best known companies. My colleague Jane Ambrose spoke to three of them. Jim Pettigrew was finance director of ICAP, the world's largest interbroker. Richard Hunter was CFO of Edrington, the global drinks giant. And Angus Coburn was CFO of global power supplier Aggreko. Jane began by asking Angus about his career.
I graduated from Edinburgh University and joined KPMG in Edinburgh and did my three-year training. And then headed off on KPMG's International Career Development Programme out to the US and spent a couple of years in Texas with KPMG. And I think that gives you a very solid grounding and, you know, allows you to see a whole series of different businesses as, you know, any ICAST training contract will allow you to do. After that, I came back for a year, worked in corporate finance and decided that what I enjoyed was being part of the company, not just advising a transaction and walking away, but actually seeing how the transaction was going to play out, how a company would be integrated, etc. So I looked at, do I go into a management accounting role in a company, or do I try and go into a more commercial role? So I decided to do the latter and went to do an MBA at IND in Lausanne in Switzerland. And then coming out of that, I joined Pepsi, where I worked in the Eastern Europe, Middle East, Africa business in London and then out in Budapest and ended up as the regional finance director for Central Europe. Spent a bit of time as a startup general manager living in Hungary and so got experience not just of finance but also of managing a business. I then came back to the UK and joined Pringle of Scotland as the managing director, doing turnaround work there, then spent a couple of years, very tough years, doing restructuring, and then eventually selling the business. Thereafter, joined Aggreko, and you know, I think the experience of actually having run a couple of businesses was very helpful to me in my CFO role at Aggreko. I didn't know the first thing about managing a business that was listed, but I had a very good chairman who taught me that, and I have just spent the last 14 years in that role and seen the company grow from, you know, being in a dozen countries to being in 105 countries now. So, tremendous experience.
Thanks for that, Angus. Richard, would you like to do the same, please?
Unlike Angus, I think I've probably got the worst CV in Scotland because I've been 33 years in one business. But like Angus, I started as a good Scottish CA, qualified with Arthur Young as it was then in Glasgow, and had a couple of years in London, which helped a lot, and then literally picked up the paper on a Friday morning and saw an interesting-looking advertisement and joined this business. And I guess although I've been that time in one job, what's helped me is the transformation that's taken place in the business. And so although I've been with one employer all that time, that employer has changed beyond all recognition, and I've been able to gain tremendous experience with it. So when I started off in the 80s, it was all about finance, core financial accounting, a lot of stock management. Stock was always the biggest asset in a whiskey company. And then throughout the 90s, we began to form a strategic plan for the major acquisition of Highland Distillers that we did at the turn of the century. And I learned a lot about dealing with the stock markets and analysts and getting banking organized for a major acquisition. So we then became, in the early 2000s, we became brand owners for the first time. And I'd never known what mattered about running a brand. So I learned about marketing spend, pricing, margins, all these good things. And then in the last 5 years, as we evolved our international distribution arrangements, we've suddenly become this international company on a very much smaller scale than Aggreko, but similar challenges. And we're now established in about 17 countries around the world with one major operating subsidiary in the Dominican Republic. So I guess it's the same thing that I've just my experience has built, and you gain experience and you gain confidence in your ability to handle new challenges. So I've just been extraordinarily lucky in a fantastic business.
Thanks for that, Richard. And Jim, could you talk us through your career history as well, please?
Yes, of course, with pleasure. A little bit like Richard, I started in Arthur Young McLellan Moores, actually, in Dundee, and did my training in Edinburgh. Pretty quickly wanted to get into business, so I did a couple of sort of really just accounting roles in Scotland. Then I moved, I guess my first senior role was actually moving south of the border, actually, with Sedgwick Group. They were a big international insurance broker in the FTSE 100 at the time. I was a divisional finance director there. Really a bit like Angus, getting some international exposure, actually. I was sort of AFD for Europe, and I found that very, very helpful. I've always found international aspects of business as fascinating, and I think it gives you a great, great perspective, as well as plenty of challenges. And quite interestingly, just as I was doing pretty well there, they moved me, actually, to become group treasurer. I knew nothing about treasury at all, actually, and became really, at quite a young age, group treasurer of Sedgwick. And that, I think, was probably the most relevant business change I had, because it just gave me such a wide experience of different things. In the past, I'd been really looking at a more accounting side of things, and then suddenly I was looking and gaining a better understanding of business, risk, and it was also corporate finance and acquisitions. And so I thought that was a very valuable experience, and certainly a very important building block in terms of next move, which was to actually deputy CFO of Sedgwick. And that was quite interesting too, because, you know, one was thinking we'd become the CFO and then suddenly the business got taken over. So I mean, I guess I had to deal with a bit of disappointment there, and it was how one reacted to that, and the choice to stay in the business, but I chose to go out, actually, and kind of really just get into a business. And it was Garban, which became ICAP, actually, and really just take my skills there and become a CFO and work my way up. And I found that interesting as well. Learning a lot from big business entrepreneurs, really. I mean, I learned a lot from people like Michael Spencer and others. I mean, really just about how to influence outcomes, you know, and just gaining experience on some of the softer skills, which perhaps I hadn't really got, you know, in terms of how to read a meeting, how to influence others. And I found that very helpful as I became a sort of more rounded CFO. And then I went on to become CFO, operating officer of Ashmore, which floated. I think IPO is fascinating too, you know. And then now I sit really as a non-exec, as you said at the beginning. And so it's quite interesting seeing all the things really that all three of us have talked about in the next generation of CFOs.
So three quite different career paths there. So, you know, I guess maybe there's not a sort of standard career path that takes you to finance director, which is good to hear. Something I would like to ask is, for people who are climbing the career ladder, would you say that there's a minimum amount of time that you should spend in a role, or on the other hand, is there a sort of maximum time before it becomes harder to move on? Any sort of hard and fast rules that any of you would put forward with that concept?
It was interesting. When I was in Pepsi, it was very much you did 2 years and moved on, because any more time than that was wasted time. And I think that's too short. In Aggreko, I've always used 3-4 years as the right amount of time in a job, because it's not just about the individual gaining experience. The company's also got to get something out of it and not be in a continual state of change. So I think 3-4 years is a pretty good time for a role as you're going through your development phase.
Okay, I agree with that.
Here, I wouldn't disagree with that either. I mean, I've tended to actually operate rule of thumb 5, but of course it's like everything in life, I suppose. You have a general thing, but it depends on the circumstances. But certainly, I think I would concur with that view. You can stay too long, can't you? I think it's not good for the business, and it's not good for the business.
I certainly think, being that I became CFO of one of our major subsidiaries in 1985, I think 29 years is definitely too long. But I think there are a couple of things I would add. I agree with what you say in terms of it's a bit like audit rotation. You know, you have to be there a certain amount of time to actually learn how to do it. And then you get to the point you've been there too long, there's a danger of being stale. But I think the other thing I was reflecting on prior to the call was just what are the things you sort of need to be thinking about as you build to become an FD. And the fundamental point for me, and that nobody had ever heard of my employer when I joined them, And but the thing I had identified, and if I give myself any credit, was it was a fantastic succession opportunity. So if you go into a new business, you know, look and see what age the chief executive are and the CFO is. Is there going to be a succession opportunity? But I think for me, more importantly, it comes back to choosing the sector you're going to enjoy. So, you know, I never wanted to make nuts and bolts in Birmingham, and I've ended up making Scotch whisky all my life up here, which has been fabulous. And then as you get involved in a job, I think one or two, sort of written three things down here. You need to do your shift at the basics. It's incredibly important when you become CFO that as you go around talking to individuals in the organization, they can quickly see that you understand the basics that they may be working on. So I like to think that I can still walk in to the and talk to the stillman at McAllen Distillery and ask him how his yields are at the distillery. It's absolutely not on my agenda as CFO, but he knows that I know, and I think that's important. The second is, these things go together, you need to recruit well. You need to build a team under you. If you're going to become CFO, you have to be able to let go of some of the detail. So as I've always thought, if you recruit really well, what happens is you float to the surface like the rubbish, and it becomes much easier to do the job at the top. And then finally, linked to that, I think, is what I call relentless delegation. If you can't delegate the detail to a well-recruited team, you'll never have the time to spend with your CFO, a CEO, and to spend thinking about the bigger issues in the business. So, you know, great recruitment and then relentless delegation are two core things for me.
Thinking about how best to prepare for the role, Jim, I know you spoke about, you know, learning some of the sort of soft skills and things. I mean, what would you say to someone that is aspiring to be a finance director? You know, is it important to gain industry specialism? And what about those soft skills? What would you say that they should be concentrating on?
Well, I think, I mean, I was saying in preparation for this call, actually, there's no substitution for experience, which I think the other everyone else, Richard and Angus, have really just said as well. And I just think that's so, so important. I mean, you've obviously got to have the technical skills. You've got to have the fans. But I think it's very important you understand the business. But all really I've seen is quite often, if you master all that, I've often seen it let, you know, potential CFOs letting themselves down in terms of presentational skills. And I just think you've got to. And when I mean presentational skills, I don't just mean standing up in front of analysts or whatever. I mean just the way in which you command the boardroom and the way in which you actually can influence outcomes, the right outcomes for the business. And I think these are things that are very, very important. And also reading of the, you know, softer skills, in my view, includes just reading meetings, reading business situations, and just being able to, as I say, influence outcomes. So these are things that you don't often read and cannot read in textbooks, but it's just, again, getting experience. And I think that's actually where quite often, as I said earlier, just, you know, look at, I still do this, actually. I still always watch very carefully all the different people I bump into and try and learn something from how they go about things. So I don't think you ever stop learning.
If I could build on that, Jim, I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting. I'm still trying to find my soft skills, but maybe I never will. But, you know, there's a couple, I thought about the type of person or what are the traits you want to be a CFO, and there's a couple of what I call motherhoods. I mean, it's essential you have the integrity and the numerical ability and the communication skills. But I think sort of three other things. I think there's a need for the CFO in particular, I think, to be driven by the high standards of performance. If the CFO isn't driving performance across the business along with the CEO, the danger is that culture isn't established. And then the real thing he said, which I like, because I wrote something very similar myself, I've written down, I think you've got to be fascinated by the way numbers can tell the story of the business, because that's what they do. And it's not about numbers for the sake of it. It's about numbers as the medium to tell what's happening in the business. And then what you do is you've got to have the ability to communicate that underlying story to audiences. And you talked about, I agree with you, in a boardroom, you need to be able to explain to your operations director or your marketing director what the key things that are happening, good and bad, in the business are. And then, yes, you do have to be able to stand up in front of analysts and bankers, in my case, because I'm a private company, stand up and explain what the numbers mean. So it's kind of getting beyond the numbers, I think, is the real secret, and just using them to tell the story.
I completely agree with that. That's what made me passionate about the CFO role, actually, to be honest. Exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'd build that. I think the one skill that's underestimated is leadership. I think Jim talked about the influencing, and that's an important part of leadership. But when you're running a function with hundreds of finance people in it, you have to be a leader in every same sense that a leader in the general management sense is. And that's something I think that you can teach people to an extent, but you get some people who are better leaders than others. I think that leadership piece of it is really important, because you're not just leading the function, but you're part of the leadership team of the business. And in terms of what Richard said, the setting of high standards and being utterly uncompromising on that is, I think, absolutely key in the role of a finance director. If the finance director doesn't do that, then the whole function is going to become very average very quickly.
I agree with that.
Yes, I agree. Funny, I've always been very, I always thought of it, funny, a little bit as obviously all part of the business, but at the same time, I always thought of myself and CFO as very independent. I was a great passionate leader. I driving that financial performance, as you said, and just really quite independent in that. That was a very key part to me. And the other thing that was interesting, I think, as I see in CFOs now, as I sit as audit chair and things like that, I see, you know, it's this balance, making sure you can see the big picture, but at the same time, you're a master of the detail, and often a master of the detail through delegation, as we talked about earlier. And I think so often I see in aspiring CFOs, or indeed CFOs, sometimes great on the big picture, but short in the detail, and the other way around, and it neither is ideal. And if you can combine in the right balance, the two, I think... you're in a really strong position, I think.
Jim, I would come back also to your word independence there. That was a good one. You know, one of the things, and Angus, you certainly are an example, is, you know, it's fascinating the number of CFOs who become CEOs. And that, I mean, I'm a notable failure in that respect, by the way. But, you know, I think that tells you something. And this relationship between the CFO and the CEO is absolutely fundamental, I think, and for two reasons. One is because you as a CFO, I think, have a unique width of knowledge about the business. You probably don't know great detail about operations or great detail about the brands and their success in the States, but you know a bit about everything. So you can talk to the CEO. And the other point on your independence one is, if the CFO can't stand up, and I mean constructively, stand up to the CEO and stand your ground and have an independent point of view, which may be different from the CEO, it's kind of just almost no point in being there. I think the worst thing possible would be what I'd call a yes-man CFO. Ian Curl, a chief executive of mine here, Ian and I have a great relationship, but we also have our moments when we absolutely don't agree, and that's very healthy. But I think I'm one of the ones in here who's absolutely happy to have a frank conversation with Ian. We debate it, and, you know, he's the boss ultimately, and off we go. But if I just say yes or no, sir, I'm not doing my job.
Absolutely. I've worked with Rupert Soltans now for 11 years, and, you know, you become like an old married couple. You know, you argue and you bicker occasionally, but you
That's
always
right.
get behind closed
right.
doors. And, you know, we battle it out in private over dinner, over strategic issues and people issues and the rest of it. Very rarely talk about finance, but it is the ultimate partnership. If you can have a good CEO-CFO partnership, it's really good for the business, because they know they've got two points of contact, two places they can go within the business for advice or a quiet word now and again.
Yeah.
And can I also ask each of you, is there any particular piece of career advice that you've received that perhaps stands out as having been particularly helpful in your career? I don't know who would like to go first on that one.
No, I can. I think, you know, if you're going to work in a lot of companies, you know, the companies I think we've all worked in are international. And it's to go, you get far. I went out to Hungary for my first CFO role, which I would never have got in Pepsi in the UK or any developed market. You know, be brave and, you know, do international early in your career, because you're going to get more responsibility. You'll get your own business to run. And, you know, it's just tremendous experience living overseas, working overseas. And it's something that prepares you, I think, for a senior career later on.
Angus, I would agree with that. I never got career advice like that, but you know, things. There's sort of very few things I regret. I certainly don't regret the choice of company. I was extraordinarily lucky finding Edrington when I did. But like you, I was very much financial accountant who became FD and kind of was then FD for the rest of my time and did some fascinating stuff with the business. But when I was younger, I would have liked to be sent abroad. I think the international thing, I completely agree with you. It's fundamental these days. And our business is miles better because we're now so international. The other thing I would have liked to have been done to me would have been to be chucked into a non-financial role in my youth. You know, given an operational activity to run, or heavens above, maybe risked in running a minor market, I would have learned a lot. And I would absolutely encourage any young financial controller, let's say, coming up, to go to the CFO or CEO and say, look, I want you to give me something difficult to do here, and it'll broaden my experience.
Yep, Gene, I agree with all these international, everything I did, I had a focus on trying to be involved in the international business for the reason that both Richard and Angus said. And I just press, I suspect I didn't press early enough in my career. Maybe it was a different generation.
No, same with me, Jim.
But, you know, if you were asking, I wish what I'd done before, I wish I'd just pressed myself forward a little bit more in terms of business opportunity. You can do it in big businesses. And Cedric, actually, I got to run a New Orleans underwriter, actually, presently, and that was great. So even within these businesses, and it goes back to the point that was made earlier, it's great if you can just, I think it can be too narrow, especially in financial control roles. I think it can just get, you can get so, you know, locked up in that. I think it's very important to get a bit of a release and get closer to the business for a while. And it may be to move out of the company you're in, or maybe if it's a big company with different operations, you can get that commercial end of experience before. Because I think you just need to have the breadth of it, because you've got to understand the business in which you are CFO, I think.
And Jim, that links back to a point I was touching on earlier, you know, your point about sort of break away from the financial control. To succeed as CFO, you need, I don't think there's probably many CFOs around who don't have an outstanding financial controller behind them. And yeah. I think it's critical, otherwise you're sucked back into your monthly KPIs and all this stuff, and you need somebody doing that for you so that you're looking at what it means for the business, you're talking to the CEO and all that stuff.
I was lucky when I was in Pepsi, I worked for finance directors who pushed my career and helped to mentor and develop. And I think also finding that mentoring relationship early is really helpful. And you can learn a lot from working with somebody who's been there, done it. So I would push people to go out and find that sort of relationship.
And can I just ask, just to finish on, any sort of top tips for anyone that you would give? You know, perhaps we've covered some of them already, but any top tips that you still have, any of you, for anyone aspiring to become an FD, what would you say?
Get some general management experience along the way, and you know, you've become a better CFO for having run a business. Going back to what Richard said, you know exactly then what it's like to receive the financial perspective, and I think you become a far better CFO for having moved out of a finance for a period.
I mean, for me, it's interesting, apart from the, you know, and maybe the point's linked, I think the thing I look back with hindsight, because I wasn't that smart, is to just say, pick your business or your sector more than just looking for a financial controller or a CFO role. Because, you know, 10 years into the role, you better be passionate about your business and enjoying it. And Angus, I know you and I, Jim, I don't know your business so well, but Angus and I know we'll talk till the cows come home about our business, because they're wonderful businesses and they're all over the world. And I've had an absolute ball working in the whiskey industry all my days. And that's terribly important for any role. I think it's not so much a CFO role, but for a general view of careers, you need to find something where you're really going to be enjoying it by the time you're at the mature stage of your career. And I've been very lucky that way.
So you do all these things, and it's fascinating, actually, how everything is really quite the same, actually. And we're three from different sort of backgrounds. It's quite interesting. The themes, it sounds like, are very, very, very similar. But at the end of the day, you just sometimes need to be in the right place at the right time.
Thank you very much. So I guess if I was to try and summarise what we've seen then, I mean, yes, three sort of very different career paths. But, you know, certainly we would say to people to strongly consider gaining international experience. That's an opportunity to perhaps get a more senior position and more exposure than you could in the UK early on in your career. Not to be too narrow in your focus, and perhaps take opportunity to learn more and more about the business. choosing a sector you're actually going to be enjoying and passionate about seems to be really important. And when we touched on the sort of soft skills and things, I think what you tended to agree on was that leadership was incredibly important. And I think with that, the sort of setting of high standards, because to a large extent, the CFO will set the tone in that area. So high standards of performance need to be set. The ability to be independent as well from the CEO, having a good relationship with them, but there will be points that, as I say, you do have to be independent and stand up. Being credible in terms of presenting both to the board and to external parties, and also a very good ability to delegate. Thank you all very much.
If you're interested in participating in the ICAST Career Mentoring Programme, either as a mentor or as a mentee, please go to the homepage of the ICAST website and click the mentoring button.